The Institute of Child Nutrition is proud to present iBites. Here you will learn about all aspects of child nutrition programs, from research to resources, from oral histories to best practices. Each iBites episode features a wealth of information to help promote the continuous improvement of child nutrition programs. I'm Dr. LaWanda Morse, the Associate Director of Grants at the Institute of Child Nutrition, and I will be your host. So welcome, everybody, to another episode of iBites. It is, believe it or not, almost 1 year later that we started iBites. So it's only fitting, I guess, that we have our Executive Director, Dr. Alicia Hall Campbell. Hey, Alicia.
Hi.
Back with us to give us kind of a State of the Union address, or maybe it's State of the Institute address.
State of ICN.
There you go. So she's going to share with us where we as an institute currently are, what we have going on, and then I think she's got some exciting news to share with us. So first, Alicia, I'm just going to turn it over to you and let you tell us what's going on.
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Morris, for this opportunity to provide an update on ICN's accomplishments over the past year and sort of where we envision ICN going in 2019. We've been really fortunate to have a really great team of staff working with us to accomplish some historical records for ICN in 2018. We had record number of face-to-face trainings reaching over 400, trainings reaching over 16,400 participants all across the U.S. as well as the U.S. territories.
That is amazing. And I want to interrupt you for a second. Like, you know, sometimes we get in the habit here at ICN of just throwing out those numbers. But like when you stop and think, over 16,000 people that we reached, I say we as a staff, because of what we're able to do here. That is phenomenal.
Well, not just that, but for the first time in the Institute's history, we provided training to the American Samoa. And so when you think about the outreach of what we're doing, not just the continental U.S.,
absolutely,
also the territories down in the really smaller pockets, Guam and the American Samoa, the Virgin Islands, we've been to Puerto Rico. Being able to provide free trainings to those individuals who are operating these programs is really amazing.
It and so absolutely is.
Yes.
That is a phenomenal number.
Yeah, so our footprint is really all across the U.S., and so we're really proud of that. Another new initiative that we launched in 2018 is the School Nutrition STAR. STAR stands for Strategies, Trainings, Action Plans, and Resources. And this program is designed for managers and site-level supervisors. And what's different from this than what we typically do, this training program has a formal mentoring component to it. So experienced directors are working with these managers, and they go through a face-to-face workshop. They develop action plans and things like that. But however, at 3, 6, and 12 months, these mentors are going to check in with them to make sure that they're following through. So they don't just leave the workshop. They have somebody that can reach out and give them some advice and how to improve their program operations. So we're really excited about this launch of the North Star.
That's so exciting because, you know, pretty much any job or career that you go into, you don't always have somebody. You're often left finding your own mentor or somebody that can show you the ropes or answer your questions. So I think it's so good that as part of that initiative, that we're providing them with people that and getting them in touch with people, helping them with that network of people who've been where they are and helping them with problems that they're dealing with and that they may have faced before and can give them some ideas and tips on how to handle it.
Exactly. And like I said, you know, typically with our trainings, you come in for an 8-hour training, 12-hour training, and you walk out the door.
Right.
With this one, we're equipping them with the skill set to go in and create an action plan. When you walk out, you sort of have a goal in mind that you're trying to achieve and accomplish. And coupled with, you know, checking in communication channels and providing additional resources through webinars and virtual instructor-led trainings, along with establishing a really good relationship with their director once they return and having their director to support them in their action plan development and and follow through. So we're really excited about this. We piloted this initiative with the state of Kansas. We had almost 60 managers to come in October. Really great feedback from the pilot feedback from the different points of check-in. So we're looking forward to it and hoping to launch it in the next month or so to other states.
That's
so they
exciting.
Can request this. Yeah. Additionally, I would say probably in June of 2018, we launched our new website. So for those who've been to the website from the summer, they see that, you know, it's much more mobile and user-friendly. You can access the resources through a search mechanism that's a lot more user-friendly. You're able to maneuver through it. So we're really excited about the launch of the new website. It was kind of behind the scenes in the making a few years.
Right.
But we have that up and running.
We actually had Peter Cleary come and do a podcast. I guess it's probably been about 3 or 4 episodes ago, and just kind of walked us through all of the features of the new website. So if our listeners haven't checked out that podcast, that's a great way to kind of figure out and find out all the cool new things on our website.
Exactly. And Peter did a phenomenal job. I mean, he really by himself almost rebuilt multiple sites. And so we really have some great staff on hand to are doing some things behind the scenes. So, yeah, so that launched. And then also we have the summer feed and educational toolkits, which just includes basic information on how to provide a safe summer meals program for sponsors and volunteers. And so state agencies can call and request these toolkits, and we can get those shipped out to them. Additionally, we have just kind of launched a new food allergies for directors training.
Oh,
and
wow.
So this is a new 12-hour training where they go through the components of food allergies and how to read labels and knowing what those allergies are. But again, the directors will leave this training with an action plan,
Yeah.
A food allergy management plan. And for those who already have one, after going through the training, they'll be able to strengthen their existing plan. So that's a new launch.
Well, you know, food allergies is such a serious and very, very important topic. It's I don't think they can ever get enough training
exactly.
in that area.
You can never get enough. And we always find ourselves when we're doing these trainings that the conversations just get so lengthy because there's so many what ifs
right.
and what ifs and what if this happens. And so just people are really because of the magnitude of what an allergy can do and the impact of that, people just really want to exercise great caution and judgment. And so being in these trainings where they can go in and ask these questions and make sure they cover all details, the trainings kind of tend to get a little lengthy because
right.
there's a lot of discussion and dialogue. But that's good because people are interested and are wanting to do due diligence when it comes to food allergies.
Well, I think so many people, if they don't have personal experience with a student or a child with food allergies, they don't realize how extensive and serious it can be. One of my girls, personal example, one of my girls has a friend who has a severe peanut allergy, and she went on a family trip with us last summer, and we had made a stop at was doing a tour in Kentucky, and at the end of the tour, they offered, we're going to offer snacks. And so the gentleman who was leading the tour said, "Does anybody in the room have a nut allergy?" And so we raised our hand. And he said, "Well, what kind of an allergy is it?" And she said, "It's a peanut allergy." And he goes, "Oh, well, this is just pecans, and it's really just pecan dust, so I'm sure you'll be fine."
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at my daughter and her friend. I was like, "We're not going to do probably. Why don't y'all go wait in the hall and we'll get you y'all a snack when we leave?" It's just, you know, people don't realize how severe it can be.
Yeah, it was just an article a few weeks ago, and I saw the article and I screamed and ran down the hall and told our ET specialist, our food safety specialist, Liz Dixon. A young boy was like at his grandmother's or some family member's house, and they were cooking fish.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't ingest it or anything, but he died from
my goodness.
Severe fish allergy from no ingestion.
He just inhaled the
Wow. Yeah, so, I mean, it really can, you know, of course, that may be a little more on the extreme side, and
sure.
you don't see a lot of those, but that is a possibility.
Right.
And so when you're thinking about life and death situations and life-threatening situations, you just can't take those things lightly, and you
Absolutely.
Have to always. So
yeah.
we do have some available resources for directors, and we're kind of behind the scenes about to develop and finalize a food allergies training for staff.
Oh,
so
great.
They'll kind of have some details there. Additionally, LaWanda, we have about 54 now courses in our e-learning portal.
Great.
And in the spring of 18, we launched about 7 HR modules. So we always hear as we're going out that, you know, we have enough topics in nutrition, food safety, and other topical areas. But one of the areas we were kind of lacking was in HR and
right.
how to manage staff. So we do have the release of those in addition to a face-to-face training, managing conflict. So
Ginger, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Ginger actually came and talked to us in another podcast. We do have another episode if people want to learn a little bit more about our new e-learning portal. Ginger was the episode, I believe, before Peter came and talked to us just about the new e-learning portal and what that meant for us as an institute and what we're now able to offer.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Our applied research division has been very engaged and released 2 great resources. We released the competencies, knowledge, and skills for managers. So again, it's a research-based list of functional areas, competencies, knowledge, and skill statements that managers need to, when hiring, that would be a really good baseline level, but also when they are advanced, a really good performance measuring or hiring measuring. So the Institute also utilizes these resources to develop our trainings. And as
sure.
a matter of fact, the last Thursday of January, actually tomorrow, I don't know if this will launch by then, but January 31st, they can always go back and listen to the archived version. We're going to highlight this new resource.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Also, the key performance indicators.
That's a big one.
Yeah, launched the interactive spreadsheets. So districts can take that information, plug in their details, and it'll automatically populate different areas, meal equivalents, things like that. So it's a really good, useful tool.
So guess what? We have a podcast about it.
Yay!
So we actually brought Pat in, and Pat chatted with us about the spreadsheets and how useful they can be for directors and managers even, and how she wished she would have had them when she was in the school district. And she just kind of talked us through the process and how, you know, if somebody's in need of something like that, they don't have to develop it. We have it.
And I think we're launching where it populates the graphs. So it takes the data and it'll populate graphs. And then people can use that as talking points or in presentations when they're going to their school board or anyone that they can utilize that information. So, yeah, there's some really great, useful ways to use those interactive spreadsheets.
That's great.
Yep. One of the other exciting things, we just hired a chef.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Chef Patrick Garmon came to us from a school district in the state of Washington. He was an executive chef and then a district director, so he hits both of those areas of expertise.
Right.
And he's going to oversee the new School Nutrition Culinary Institute, which is going to be a national culinary training program for frontline staff, cooks, managers and directors and chefs. And so
Exciting.
We're in the initial phases of that. He just kind of came on board in November. We'll have an advisory council meeting where we'll kind of bring in experts from across the country, sort of assess what's out there, and then direction to go forward. So that's coming up soon.
He's on a podcast. I think he was featured in December, believe it or not, right after he came on board. I hijacked him after he had been here for maybe 9 days or something. I was like, all right, come on up. It's your turn.
Yeah. And then lastly, just, ICM, or the National Food Service Management Institute, our former name, we were established in 1989.
Oh, my goodness. Happy birthday.
I know. Through the Richard B. Russell National School Lunch Act. So, you said happy birthday, but we will be celebrating 30 years in 2019.
That's
so,
awesome.
Yeah, we're going to make it a really big celebratory event. And so we're going to put it on our email signatures and just kind of make it a really great celebration, because to be around federally funded, the only national center doing what we do for 30 years is big. And so we don't want to minimize that in any way.
Absolutely
we really
not.
Do want to showcase the work and the impact that we've had. So looking forward to the year-long 30-year celebration. The actual anniversary is in November.
Okay.
So that will kind of coincide with our National Advisory Council meeting. And so it'll kind of culminate with that and make it a really big thing. But that it will be here to come.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And then I guess the last big thing that we want to just bring to people's attention, we did host the School Nutrition Leadership Academy Exploratory Task Force meeting. Long name, but we brought in a group of really experienced directors who are leaders in the field, nationally known, and we wanted them to sort of assess the current landscape of leadership training programs for school nutrition professionals, identify where the existing gaps are, so we want to avoid duplication. We don't want to create anything that's already out there.
Right.
We want this to be to help sustain the field from a professional development standpoint. It doesn't make sense to replicate multiple trainings of the same thing.
Absolutely.
So really doing a thorough assessment, identifying the gaps. But again, they made some recommendations on where they saw us needing to go towards for this Leadership Academy training program.
That's so encouraging to know that, you know, not only are we trying to help the people that are in the profession now in their current jobs, but also giving them advice and tips and helping them grow professionally where they are, really trying to take that profession into the next, what would it be, millennial,
I mean, it's just so much. And a lot of things that we hear is that, you know, what they're learning or what they really need to know is not always in a training or a textbook.
Sure.
It's those soft skills that you just kind of develop, or as you interact or go to different conferences and meetings, you're talking to people and just seeing how they navigated the waters. And so that's something that we want to kind of encapsulate and bottle up and share that, because I say this all the time. I mean, with succession planning and people eligible for retirement in the next 3 to 5 years, there will be a wave of professionals that will be walking out. So how do we ensure that the new coming professionals who will be responsible for managing multiple millions of dollars and through these child nutrition programs have the adequate skill set to be able to become the leaders?
Right.
And you know, you may know financial management, you may know human resources, but what are those softer level skills? You know, how to communicate with your board, or you know, how to create a strategic plan.
Sure.
What are those kind of skills that you can't go right now to the ICN's website to download? And so that's what we're trying to do, is just trying to do a true assessment and then make recommendations to kind of design something that will equip those future leaders or even existing leaders to manage their programs successfully.
So I'm going to build off of that. And one of the things I'm planning on doing, and so I guess we'll use this as our jumping off point. We're actually going to do a 4-part leadership series podcast series with some of those leaders that you mentioned that came in for that expert panel task force. And we're going to talk to them about what it is that helped them get to where they are. What are some of those skills, and what are some of the situations that they've had to navigate, and what tips would they have for somebody who's trying to excel in their field and move into a leadership position? And, you know, I think as a kicking off point, you would be, let's start with you and look at some of those questions maybe. Maybe even the most basic, Alicia, I would say is, how do you define leadership? You know, you're the executive director of a national institute. What's leadership to you?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think there are many different theories and styles and definitions of leadership, but one of my personal favorites is leadership is sort of the ability to guide others towards a common goal for the good of an organization.
Agreed.
Another researcher sort of defines it as, you know, leadership is being flexible and having a broad range of skills, but also a vision to create and develop a structure that empowers others.
You know, you do a great job of that with your staff. And I do, as one of your staff members, I can say you do embody that definition. You know, you work so hard to empower the people to do the job of the Institute, and you are there to guide us and support us. And so you mentioned that there are several things, qualities that make up a leader. What are some of those specific qualities that you think are vital for somebody who's in a leadership position?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for the comment.
Absolutely.
I think a good leader really realizes they can't do everything by themselves. You know, you have to have the ability to self-assess and determine where your strengths are, and then acknowledge where you may be weak in certain areas, and then build you a team around those weaknesses. When decisions are being made, a really effective leader needs to have multiple perspectives. And we always play, you know, the devil advocate, you know.
Right.
We don't make a decision without thinking about all angles. And so having those multiple perspectives at the table and having the capabilities to make an informed decision, I think is really critical that you're not making emotional decisions or rash decisions, but really thinking through all aspects before decisions are made. So an effective leader must base their leadership style on that. And one thing I always say is not really a cookie cutter approach to leadership. You can't have a one style fit all sort of mindset.
Right.
It's sort of situational. So you kind of have to use different leadership styles based on different situations.
So because of that, and you just said you can't use the same kind, but do you have a preferred style that you tend to go back to?
Yeah, my typical two, I would say, are coaching and the democratic leadership style.
Okay.
Coaching sort of entails teaching and mentoring staff and, you know, walking them through certain scenarios and examples. And then the democratic leadership sort of enables the team to be involved in the decision-making process. And, you know, you really want to get the buy-in from the staff. When you have the buy-in from the staff, they are a little more to sort of carry out and go through when they feel like they've been a part of the decision-making process. So,
you know, I will say I'm one of those people who I sometimes – some people have to put the brakes on me because I tend to make those emotional reactions. And you always do such a great job of saying, okay, let's stop and let's look at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. That's almost always the first thing you say. So I think it's really important when you talk about it's who you have around you, knowing what, for me, that's a personal weakness, knowing that I need somebody who says, okay, take a deep breath and let's look at the big picture. So you've done a great job. Again, this isn't a Boost Alicia up session, but I do want you to know, yes, you do embody those qualities. So that's really important that you identify that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a leader makes decisions based on the good of the organization and
Absolutely.
Not personal motives.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important to note that, you know, you have organizational policies, guidelines, and things like that. So that if you're making decisions based off of that, it makes it easy to make fair and consistent decisions.
Agreed.
Versus being emotionally attached to something. I mean, there are things that I like personally that I realize, you know, from an organizational standpoint that may not always be in the best interest. So when you have those guidelines and the leader sort of sticks to those guidelines and policies, it makes it easy to make decisions because you can always kind of lean back on that. And again, never make decisions out of emotion and feelings.
Right.
So when you do get frustrated or something bothers you, because at the end of the day, we're all human.
Right.
And so things do impact us differently. You know, being able to step away from the situation and this is not the time to make that decision.
Agreed.
And just thinking it over, thinking the pros and cons, that multiple perspective, devil's advocate. And at the end of the day, what's the best decision for the organization? And so coming back, and while you may not agree with it personally, from a leadership standpoint, this is the best decision. And I think if we can kind of do that, things would, because then you can say, you know, you're not playing politics, you're not playing favorites. These are decisions that are having to
right.
be made. Yeah.
Well, and it's the not having the yes man or yes woman as staff people or in a leadership position, that you really do want people who look at the best interest of the Institute and say, okay, well, from my perspective, here's what I see. And then you're able as the visionary for the Institute to take all of those opinions and facts and then come up with what the best decision is for the organization as a whole.
Right. You know, I challenge you guys in our directors' meetings to not be yes people.
Right.
You know, we're not here to be yes people. I don't want a group of people who are going to agree with everything. The idea is to challenge, because I'm just one body. And so when we can think about it from multiple perspectives, it really gives us the bigger picture. And so, yeah, I don't want a group of yes people around me. And that's what a really good leader needs to be able to do is, you know, you don't want your senior team or your staffers to be individuals who always go with the flow, but you don't always want people who are going to challenge everything. Right. So kind of finding that balance there. But, you know, being able to have people to say, you know, based on my expertise, based on my professional opinion, this is what I think and this is how I feel. But utilizing that expertise and, again, taking the emotion and feelings out of it, sticking to the facts.
Absolutely.
That way you're able to make those informed decisions.
You know, I think that's a tough concept for some people who go into a leadership position, is that you have to always be right.
Right.
And it has to always be your way. You know, you think back to when I was a little girl, and you would think, well, one day I'm going to be a teacher because I want to be the boss.
Right, right.
And so people sometimes think that when you get in a leadership position, it's all about having it your way and you making the call. But I think true leadership, like you said, is the embodiment of somebody who understands it's not always your way.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, the Institute has been around 30 years and Alicia has not. So my age, but not at the Institute. But I guess, you know, to think that the Institute existed before Alicia's leadership and it will exist after her leadership. So the Institute is bigger than one person.
Right.
And so when you think about the organization and what's in the best interest of that, it's not your personal opinions about things. You have to make organizational level decisions. And so when you can bring in people and take feelings and emotions out of it and make those decisions, 9 times out of 10, now, yeah, you'll make some decisions that aren't always, but a good leader also acknowledges,
yes,
when decisions are don't go right, or, and also allows for mistakes.
Right.
You don't learn unless there are mistakes. And so making an environment that's comfortable for mistakes, acknowledging those and learning from that and moving forward so you're not duplicating or repeating those same things.
Agreed.
So, you know, those are just some of the things that, you know, good leaders. Leadership is a process. It didn't happen overnight. You know, I'm still growing. One of the directors who had come in for the Leadership Academy made this comment, and it's kind of been sticking with me. I don't know who the original author of the comment was, but he said, when you're green, you're growing, and when you're ripe, you rot.
Oh,
so you
wow.
should always be in a learning environment. So I said all of that to say, you know, leadership is an ever-evolving,
yeah,
ever-growing process. And so when you feel that you're at a point where you're mature and there's nothing else to learn, then you're ripe and you're actually rotten. You
yeah.
should always challenge yourself to think outside of the box, to think to the next level, to continue that growth. And change is never comfortable. You want to make it uncomfortable because
right.
that's when you know you're challenging yourself and you're thinking new ideas and new ways to do things.
Well, and I think to put it in perspective of what we do, you go back to that number where you said, you know, we've impacted over 16,000 people. And then if you play the, okay, well, those 16,000 people served lunches to how many kids and how many adults that may have been in the building that then impacted those many families. I mean, the number is just insurmountable.
Yeah. And really that's what makes it so rewarding because, you know, we're doing more than just developing resources and
right.
trainings. You know, we're educating the professionals on how to do their jobs adequately, effectively, successfully, and then they go back and prepare healthy, nutritious meals. Children come through the program and ingest those meals. They go home. They do well on exams and,
right.
you know, the academics. And so when you think about it and just the rewards from that standpoint, it makes it so worth what we do every day.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really appreciate you stopping by and chatting with us. I know you're a very busy lady.
Ah.
so I appreciate it. And chatting with us about your leadership thoughts and what it is that makes a person in a leadership position be an effective leader. So I'm very excited about what we as an institute have done, but where we're headed as we go into this 30th year and as we go into this leadership series. So thank you, Alicia, for joining us.
Thank you for coordinating the iBites, and we really do appreciate your work in this. And I've heard really wonderful things. So.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, we appreciate it. So until next time.
Tune in next month for more iBites. And until then, remember, there's nothing more important than the health and well-being of our nation's children. This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture food and nutrition service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-50-9410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.